I'm Mary Harris. I'm in for Leonard Lopate today. And today we're going to talk to Kate Winkler-Dawson about her new book, Death in the Air, because two serial killers prowled the streets of London during the winter of 1952. One was a middle-aged man who targeted women and lured them into the back of his home before he murdered them. The other was a thick fog that hung over the city and lasted five long days. The smog held on to toxins emitted from the coal Londoners burned to stay warm, and it would ultimately lead to the deaths of 12,000 people. Kate Winkler-Dawson, who teaches journalism at UT Austin, tells the stories of these two killers and how their tales intersect and what lessons we can learn from them in her new book, Death in the Air. It's published by Hachette. Thank you so much for joining the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So you learned about these two stories. How did you even think about linking them?
Well, I'm a true crime fanatic. This was not going to be that book. This was about the fog. I was stunned when I found out no one had written about it because it's a really wonderful story. I mean, it's very sad, but it's so visual. It would have been a dream for any author. So I was really excited about pursuing the story. And of course, in narrative nonfiction, you have to find the characters. And so I was trying to track down the characters. And I found a politician who is sort of my protagonist in this whole thing. And so I was searching and searching for anything in the newspapers about the smog. Parliament, you know, lawmakers, people with outrage and complaining. And instead, I kept running into John Reginald Christie, who was nicknamed the Beast of Rillington Place. And then I just started putting it together. I found, you know, letters that his wife had written during the smog and, you know, his killing before and after. And he killed his wife a few days after. I mean, listen, I'm not going to pretend that the smog drove him to kill six people. That wasn't the point. The point was the juxtaposition between these two killers and the incredibly different reaction from people in Parliament, from the press, and from the public, and how they were sort of enamored by one killer versus the other one, who at the time it was thought had killed 4,000, which is an extraordinary amount of people to die from air pollution.
Thousands of people killed by air pollution,
right.
And yet people were obsessed with a serial killer.
Absolutely.
Who killed six people?
For six, maybe eight. There's a wrongful conviction question mark in this book also. But, you know, regardless of that,
yeah,
it's still a very large number. And so going into the story of John Reginald Christie, when he went on the run about 6 months after the fog, you know, it had been very well known that 4,000 people had died. And the 12,000 came in decades later. That figure was buried for a long time because the government was really specific about the cutoff date of how many people died from a fog. Because how can you tell really how many people are going to die from air pollution during that time period? And so they chose a cutoff date that was far too early, so that it was, you know, anybody who died 3 weeks after the fog didn't die from the fog. Well, that's not what happens with bronchitis, with respiratory issues. And so the real number we found later on was 12,000. So an additional 8,000 that the government blamed on a flu epidemic that never actually happened.
Well, so tell me a little bit about the fog. How did it end up happening?
So, you know, fogs were nothing new in London. Obviously, that's what the city's known for. And this, you know, fogs had happened for hundreds of years as London grew in the 17th and 18th century. All of the forests went away. So coal became the prominent heating source because wood was too expensive. And so these blackened skies that...
Say fog, it sounds kind of like
romantic.
London fog and lovely, but it sounds like it was very different than that.
No, it was yellow and disgusting and smelled like rotten eggs.
It smelled like rotten eggs.
Yeah, it wasn't romantic. And so it's not at all. And so, you know, and of course we connect fog with Jack the Ripper and these really exciting stories. And incidentally, Jack the Ripper never killed anyone on a foggy night. So, you know, we have these sort of memories and connections with fog in London. And they occurred every winter like clockwork. And generally what would happen is this a weather system, a high weather pressure system, would sit over the city. So it's an anticyclone weather inversion. And it would trap any of the pollution to the ground. So it would be cold, moist air that would create a fog, would be trapped under a layer of warm air. And normally, a wind would come in, blow away the high pressure system, and then, of course, all the pollutants would, you know, go into the ozone and, you know, float into the atmosphere. And so these high-pressure systems didn't stick around for more than 1 or 2 days traditionally, and this one stayed for 5 days. So the coincidences here created this sort of perfect storm. So the city had just discontinued its electric tram system. So it replaced it with those beautiful red double-decker buses that ran on diesel fuel. And then we've got 8 million people burning coal on the coldest night of the year, which this is, we're actually right in the middle of the 65th anniversary of the smog. So it started on December 5th.
So when did people start showing up at hospitals? When did they know it was killing people?
Pretty quickly. But, you know, there was no centralized computer. There were barely computers. I mean, no centralized computer system. So it was really just word of mouth. And honestly, the first people who were really alerted were the funeral homes and the florists, because the florists ran out of burial wreaths very quickly, within weeks. And the funeral homes ran out of room, and there were no plots. So one of the characters in my book is a 13-year-old girl who's now a grandmother who lives in Surrey. And she had, after her father passed away, I'm giving a little bit of the book away here, but after her father, no, sorry.
Just a little bit, guys.
Sorry to my publisher. But, you know, after I, after she, her father passed away, there was no plot available, so they had to keep his body in the living room for several weeks.
So it was living room
in the living room, right? So in the parlor, and because and they just her mom slid the door and locked it, and her father stayed with his body dressed and ready to be buried for 2 to 3 weeks before there was a plot available. And this wasn't unusual during this time, but you know, you have to keep in mind who the victims were. The victims were generally people who were over 60. Huh. Who had health issues to begin with. So her father was young. He was in his 40s, but he had chronic bronchitis from years of living in London. And 80% of the people in London smoked tobacco during this time period. So it is this sort of perfect storm of things happening. On top of that, the British government had just released rationing on the cheapest coal, the nutty slack, which is this nasty, brown, crumbly coal. You have to burn an extraordinary amount in order to get any kind of warmth or heat. So 5 days before the smog started, the government took the rations off and said, buy as much as you want, which is the first time coal had been available for years because of World War II. So all of this created this really horrible, perfect storm.
My name is Mary Harris. I'm filling in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm here with Kate Winkler Dawson, author of Death in the Air. So tell me a little bit about John Reginald Christie.
Well, I kind of describe him as, you know, a quiet, unassuming man who, of course, is, you know, it's the perfect description for a serial killer. I think he has kind of he checks all the boxes for someone you would sort of predict would be a killer eventually. He had an overbearing mother. He had an abusive father. You know, he had problems with women, with girls, being very vocal about him not being a very good lover when he was younger. And he was gassed in World War I, so he lost part of his voice. So he kind of had a squeaky, prepubescent boy voice happening, which doesn't attract women very well.
And at the same time, this fog, what was he doing?
Well, he was plotting to kill his wife in the middle of the fog. So he went out in the middle, day two of the fog, which would be today, December 6th. And he went out into the middle of the fog and resigned from his job for no really good reason. He gave a false reason for resigning, didn't tell his wife, and came back home and was essentially sick for 3 or 4 days. And then 3 days after the fog lifted, he strangled her in another plot reveal. strangled her and put her under the floorboards of the parlor. And so, you know, really these two stories collide in March or April of 53. Right at this point in the fog, John Christie is a guy no one knows as a serial killer who's just another person trying to deal with London transit and just not, trying not to die and be sick in this fog. And really the stories come together, you know, some 4 or 5 months later.
How did the press write about the fog?
Very little. It was, some of the headlines I found were so interesting. It was, I was actually very excited because I saw a headline that said, concern over deaths. And then it's because people kept falling into the Thames River because the fog was so thick.
They would literally just fall in?
Yeah, thwarted again. I didn't find anything. And that became a story for me, was that it was, there was an entire story about someone who was hit in the head by a duck who couldn't find his way. And so people were concerned about the duck, and the man had to go to the hospital. But no, there were no stories of, you know, this wasn't a flood. This was, you know, there weren't people lying in the streets. It wasn't sort of dramatic scenes. And the footage I have from the BBC of the fog is, it's just these disgusting black clouds. But people are kind of smiling through it. You know, this is nothing new. What's new was that it lasted for so long.
Well, it was just normal, right?
It was. I mean, this was a byproduct of living in London. It was the most populated city in the world at the time. It was the most industrialized city in the world. And this was, you know, kind of par for the course. And in all of the people I interviewed for this book, including my characters who are still alive, they all said the same thing, which was, you know, listen, this was just something that we lived through. We already lived through the Blitz. We lived through, you know, seven years earlier, World War II. So it was a kind of push on and move through the story. And 4 years earlier, we had a similar incident in Pennsylvania, and there's a large museum dedicated to the 20 people who died in Pennsylvania, and certainly nothing like that in London. And it's just sort of two different attitudes to the story.
Huh. So to compare the press coverage of this serial killer to the coverage of the fog.
Oh, the press coverage for the serial killer was fascinating. I mean, it was amazing. He was on the run for about 10 days. And of course, it was just wall to wall, Beast of Rillington Place. And that's what caught my attention. I kept seeing these headlines that said, second body found, third body found, body in the floorboards of the parlor, bodies in the alcove in the kitchen, which is, of course, going to catch anybody's attention. And so it was just a nonstop coverage, full page, feature stories. And one of the characters in my book is a reporter named Harry Proctor, who was sort of the star crime reporter in London. And he talks a lot about checkbook journalism, where these journalists would write a check to the defense attorneys of these murderers to pay for their defense in exchange for
exclusive access.
Yeah. So John Christie's story is incredible because he made it incredible. He became sort of the star he really wanted to be. He was sort of the man who faded into the wallpaper. I mean, you really didn't notice him, but now he was a star, and that's really what he wanted.
Well, so what does that tell you about what we see and what we don't see then and now?
Well, you know, for me, there are a lot of really important lessons learned from this. Of course, air pollution, it's something we take for granted, the quality of our air. And so I still think we are constantly derailed in this country by stories that are sexier, more salacious. You know, every time we receive a outlandish tweet, the news cycle shifts, and all of a sudden we forget about North Korea, about what's happening with the EPA, criminal justice. You know, we're so easily distracted, I think, as a country, and as a member of the press, I certainly feel like that. And these incredibly important stories are buried, and I think that in London, as is now, it's easier to be concerned about a clear and present danger like the serial killer on the run and then the facts of all the bodies coming out than it is to tackle a systemic issue like air pollution that takes decades to solve and never will get solved. So, you know, you're talking about two very different stories that to me both, you know, were shining a light on what we value and what was valued in that country.
And it's so funny. It was really like a time with no regulations. And it just, I wonder what you think writing about it now.
Well, I mean, it's talking to the people who lived through it then, it's horrifying. And, you know, I'm from Texas, and we have certainly our share of wildfires. And I've covered wildfires as a producer in Northern California. And I know what that is like, just being in the fumes and not being able to escape. Even in a hotel, you can't get away from it. And so I know that, you know, I was really able to empathize with the people in London, because I have felt trapped before, not out of a danger, but of the smell and the feeling and not being able to get it off you. And so it's very concerning, of course, but it was a wonderful book to write.
Kate Winkler Dawson, thank you so much for joining us today. Go check out her book, Death in the Air, The True Story of a Serial Killer, The Great London Smog, and The Strangling of a City.
Thank you.